Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about ball bearings, those things that you find in the bottom of tool drawers, just rolling about the place. Normally in the, probably if you move a bench or something, you'll see it in the dust, these little silvery things. And probably won't surprise you that when I see it, I am just in absolute awe of these things. We've got billions of them. I bet there's probably, for every person on Earth, there's probably hundreds, if not thousands, of ball bearings that have been made. So you can imagine in years to come, people will be, the next generation of life form, which may or may not be intelligence, will be doing some archaeology and actually see one of these ball bearings in some rock and trying to say, where did that come from? How did it get formed? I think it's absolutely awesome, awesome ball bearings. The fact that they're so good. So any two ball bearings are equal to each other, just roughly speaking, to the size of any two ball bearings are usually, in terms of accuracy between the size of them, it's they're accurate to one with respect to the other. If you divide one by the other, they'd be accurate to, say, 50 millionths, and their actual sphericalness is on the millionth. We're talking submicron smoothness that we're generating of these balls. They're just absolutely incredible. And the hardened steel, beautiful, beautiful stuff. And there's something pretty awesome about them. Now, ball bearings, you say, are in wheels, or used in wheels, or mechanical wheels. Now, the thing about them is, I'm going to give a general talk about them because I think they're so fantastic. Now, the human race developed bearings before they actually developed wheels. Now, bearings, this gives you an idea of the difference between a bearing and a wheel. What would happen is they'd have their big log or their big mouth, I don't know, or a big stone for building Stonehenge. And as they're dragging it along the place, they can either drag it such that it grinds into the mud, or they can actually get specialist rocks, sort of round river rocks, and actually put them at the front of the big rock they're heaving along, and underneath it, those rocks will tumble around. So I think they'll tumble half as far, but they'll eventually tumble as the rock moves forward. So the top of the rock will rotate underneath. The rocks will be a bearing, so they actually allow movement but transmission of loads. That's the definition of a bearing. So a bearing allows movement but the transmission of force through it. But the rock will rotate, so the rock will move a unit, and the top above it will move two units. So what will eventually happen is that your big boulder will move forward, or big square stone will move forward, and the bearings will travel through underneath and go out the back, and you have your village kids, the other people who are not doing the big pulling, they just pick up those bearings and actually rotate them around. And of course, the modern invention is having the bearings automatically feed into each other. That was a big aha moment. And so in terms of the machine age, the industrial revolution, yes, it's steam, but it's also bearings. You could have as much steam as you like, but if you had the machines without bearings, you'd have friction. With friction, you have wear, and even the best laid plans would just not work too well. The idea is that bearings happen before wheels, and a wheel is a disc on an axle, and the axle has got a bearing in it. Now, it's not a ball bearing, it's a bearing, and it's generally greased. And so what would happen in the ancient times, people would say, oh, have you put grease on those bearings? And there'd be a limit to how fast you could go. So one of the things is that armies which would go around really quickly would lose their bearings, would go out. So they could go beat a battle, but their bearings would wear out, and you get to basic animal fat and slob it on your bearings, and your stick would rotate. Now, if you felt it, you'd say, "My God, is that a bearing?" Something you wouldn't recognise nowadays. And I'm just looking up here at our wheelie bins. We've got wheels, and they've got a slip bearing, which is okay for that type of stuff, but for a wheelie bin that I have here, makes a journey of about 30 metres out to the front of the house and back again, once every week, or every 2 weeks for some of them. So I have a recycle and a green bin and a rubbish bin. So we've got three wheelie bins, all different colours, our colour scheme. And I look around the places for things which don't move very much. There's that still has a slip bearing, but the ball bearings are sort of like the, the control of friction. So we have fire. There's evidence that pre-humans used fire, and animals use fire. There's birds in Australia which pick up burning sticks and it will fly across and spread fires, which is, how's that for something insane? There's a fire and these birds want to go hunting, so they pick up a burning stick and fly across and drop it down. So it's like the use of fire, as it goes over to the actual lighting a match. It's sort of, it's the general concept. We've been a species which has been fighting friction, and ball bearing has been this amazing tool that we have used, a ball bearing race. So rather than rocks, we've had these precision rocks which recirculate by themselves, and it's just the most amazing thing to see. And if you can sort of imagine the ancients doing something, we've had this other episode, and now we're back to the ancient idea. And as a car just glides down the road, well, the wheel has no friction, well, it has friction against the road surface. The actual wheel itself is not moving, but it's gliding down nice smoothly. You can barely hear it. It's because the bearings are so quiet, the whisper quiet of these balls, space age balls, rotating around the place. It's a really beautiful thing to behold, and a ball bearing itself is beautiful. I've used ball bearings for various things, spaces, machines. They're just beautiful, beautiful pieces of engineering, a perfect sphere. That's just, my son's got pissed off listening to me podcast at the back here. Yes. Now, the general idea of these podcasts is that you're listening to it for more information or a different view from just looking up an article. You perhaps wouldn't spontaneously listen up to an article. It's a sort of a different direction. So I'm trying to build these ball bearings. I'm actually genuinely in awe of ball bearings. It's a piece of technology, and I suppose I've had an example one time of bunting around Canada to get these precision small ball bearings. I said, "Oh, look, I'm looking for a particular type of ball bearing on the phone." These are, remember the old cord phones? I really can't remember what the actual phone was like that I wrote up, and I spoke to this Canadian. I think he was on in Ottawa. I think in Ottawa. I was in Toronto. I was speaking to him after these precision ball bearings of this size. So, and he said, "Oh, look, I think I may be able to find it for you." And he said, "Are you writing with a pen?" And I said, yep. And he said, "Well, look at the end of your pen. You've just described the ball bearing that's at the end of your pen." And indeed, I said, "Thanks." And then we broke open these pens, and the ball bearings were incredibly high quality, incredibly round. These really high precision ball bearings. Those ball bearings to the ball bearings in your bike, in your car, in your walking machine, in your air conditioner, anything which has a motor which has to rotate all the time, your pool pump, all these various things, that ball bearings are anywhere. We're going to discuss how they're made. First, I'm going to discuss probably a hypocritical story from an old guy. So a lot of these people don't hear these stories and think they're rubbish, and they are probably rubbish, but they've also not chatted with old people. These are old machinists in dark, dim dark factories which are being shut down. We hardly manufacture anything in Australia. So in my youth, there'd be little factories all around the place. You know, in the suburbs, you'd go around and there'd be a sort of a brick garage and a factory and a few machines going around. That's all disappeared. I don't know, 10th person would be some sort of machinist, and everyone would know how to clean machines. And it always happened. I think they'd spend a week a year just stripping their machines and re-greasing them so they could work. These are things that people, I suppose, nowadays don't quite understand. So I can't remember this. I sort of remember this person telling me, oh, look, they discovered ball bearings by accident, or the actual process of making ball bearings by accident, when that piece of metal went into a flour mill, and this metal just rolled around the flour mill and came out roughly circular, and they thought, oh, we'll go across it, and that the actual original ball bearings, the actual wire it was made out of was square because the actual force in terms of shaping a square into a sphere meant that it worked harden more. And this is the entire thing, is that ball bearings have a work hardened outer shell, so it's steel, but not as we know. I should say there's other ball bearings I've seen. This is a ruby and sapphire ball bearing, so in nuclear reactors where you've got high radiation effects and high temperature effects, you can have ceramic and these beautiful things. I must say that one of the beautifulest, most beautiful things I've seen is a star sapphire ball bearing, possibly a ruby ball bearing, because I remember it being a bit red in a vacuum system, so where you can't have grease in it. And some of these instruments, and I'd be interested into what ball bearings you actually put up in space and the Mars rover and stuff, whether they're just steel. Because steel, if I can say, steel in a vacuum system has a problem. If you've got steel in a ball bearing, there's a beautiful kookaburra just sitting up here. If you've got steel and you've got no lubricant, that's right. They had that in the early Apollo missions. The steel, if it's really clean vacuum, what moves the grease evaporates in space, it hardens, and the actual parts hard well together. So they had a few systems in the early space programs that send parts up and they'd hard weld, and it was until they actually got it down that they could actually, things returned, that they could actually go through. And they solved that by putting graphite, using sapphire and other things which don't weld. So if you get just two metals together and there's no fat or molecules between it, they will actually weld together. You can actually just get aluminium, lead, whatever it is, and if you clean them up enough, I think there's lots of examples of this. You can actually just get two bits of metal, clean them up really a lot, and actually stick them together. And so that's the problem with bearings, the way you've got these exotic bearings. And the story is this is accidental discovery. Unfortunately, that's tainted the way it was accidentally discovered has tainted my understanding of the modern ball bearing, which I'll quickly go over here. So the modern ball bearing starts off with a steel, which is the same material as the race. So the ball bearings have to go in a rail. So when a car drives past, it's actually a bearing on rails going past. These balls are rotating. It's actually travelling on rails. It's cars are on rails, but the rails are in the bearings in the car. But to make it there, in general, the practice is to have it of the same hardness and material, such that the balls don't wear out and the race doesn't wear out. Or they wear out at exactly the same speed. You don't get this wear out thing. So you have a wire. And the wire chops off a length of wire such that it has the length of wire gives you a cylinder of a certain height, and the volume of that cylinder has to be about 10% greater than the final volume of your ball bearing. So this process means that you eventually lose that amount of material. So if you start with too much material, you have to grind it for a much longer time. So it's important to get just right. So this goes into a die stamp. These little cylinders go into a die stamp, which is a die stamp, and it's stamped out as a little ball, and it has something called, well, I think it's called a flange or something. It's got a little ring of metal around it. So you can imagine these as little balls. There's often little lollies you have with these little rims around the outside. This rim, I think it's called a flange. So they look like little rather than like a planet, they look a bit like Saturn, like a kiddie's drawing of Saturn. It's got like a little, so if you cut it in profile, it'll look like it had little ears, this little rim around the equator of additional metal. And it goes through three processes of cutting, grinding, polishing, and then heating. There you go. It's much easier to talk about that. So it's die stamping. It's stamped out the cylinders. The wires stamped out into cylinders. And the cylinders, so the wires cut into cylinders. The cylinders are stamped into protospheres. The spheres then have a rim of a flange. I think that's a word for it. I don't know what the technical word for it is. And then it goes through these three processes. And what I think about, there's something I really like about these processes. So what happens is that there's a very hardened metal, much harder metal set of races. So this is a groove, a bottom groove and a top groove. And these ball bearings slip into here, and as these grooves rotate around, they cut, grind, that is remove material, and polish. This is having very fine material, which removes it until you eventually get soft things. So there's essentially three of exactly the same machines, but they do different processes. And now what happens is, so if you can imagine a record player with grooves, these radial grooves, so it's grooves 100 grooves out, races, which the little ball bearings would roll around. So at the bottom it's a full circle, the top it covers from midday, in my view, it's free to roll from there's nothing there from midday to 2 o'clock, and then from 2 o'clock back up to, so did I say midday? From 12 o'clock to 2 o'clock, there's a gap, and then from 2 o'clock all around to 12 is full. And what happens is that these a ball bearing will be sitting in a pile in the in that midday to 12 area of because there's a gap at the top, what will happen is they'll sit in one of these bottom grooves, and then as the top rotates relative to the bottom, it will be subsumed under. So you can imagine it at the top rotating in a clockwise direction. It will, as it progresses forward, it will go over the top, and the ball bearings will find the path of least resistance and find themselves in this circular grinding environment with the roof hemicircle going around and the bottom hemicircle, and they'll actually as the bearing, and this bearing process will actually start to grind them. Now, each of those 100 grooves is slightly different and would produce a slightly different ball bearing. But what happens is statistically, the bearings emerge from this groove. They're coming out from the leading edge, so the 2 o'clock edge, and you've got the midday, the 12 o'clock edge. They go in and they emerge from the 2 o'clock edge as it rotates around. So the intake goes, say, from 12 to 1 o'clock, and the output goes from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock as it moves across. So those ball bearings are goes up. When they come out, they mix and emerge, and so any ball bearing which goes through thousands of times, you know, this is rotating at fairly high speed for hours. I think it takes a couple of days to make a good ball bearing. That's hard to imagine, but it goes through and say easily thousands of times. Each race it goes in is pretty much randomised, so it will go in cutting groove number 100, then 57, then 32, then 3, then 97, and then 94. It will go through pretty much randomised, and so each ball bearing you have will have been statistically through the same number of a selection, pretty much the same selection of races. And so it's unlikely that a ball bearing will have missed a race, and it's unlikely that a ball bearing will have been through the same race five times, for instance. And it cuts across, and so obviously if one race is really bad, you'll have to really look and find it out. But in general, this means that you have a precision. You've got the precision of making these cutting races, and they'll be cut, grind, and polish races. But there's statistical thing. I just love it in terms of that you've got the greatest enormous precision given by this randomization factor, and it's sort of like it's got these lotto tickets and it goes in a lotto drive, and it really doesn't matter, everyone's a winner, but it does this random lottery that the ball bearing goes through. And so this single ball bearing has had this path from a piece of wire stamping. I think there's a grinding machine which grinds off the ears, and then there's a cutting machine which cuts it down, and then a grinding machine which then takes it from, say, if it was 8.3 down to 8.05 millimeters, it grinds it there, then it polishes, and then polishing it really doesn't vary it that much. And at the end of this process, they can get something which is incredibly round. So I don't know, in terms of parts per, so it's round to a millionth. So the Earth's 12,000 kilometers wide, so something 12 kilometers high on Earth. Well, the Earth's not that round, but say if it was around, Mount Everest is 8.5 kilometers high, I think. So Mount Everest, in terms of the diameter, radius is, so the Mount Everest is 1,006 is 1,000th. It's less, the roundness is rounder than our planet by far. So in terms of the roundness is, say, six, the entire surface of the Earth, nothing's more than easily under a few hundred metres high. You know, you can imagine the Earth being so perfectly round, and the highest point was only a few hundred metres above the other. So it's rounder than our planet, for sure. And we produce thousands of them. They're worth a fraction of a cent, nothing. We've got these big machines, and it means that mankind, or personkind, or humankind, have actually conquered friction. And the majority of people don't know, don't care. And I suppose that's the other majesty of nature. Lots of animals do incredible things, but they're unaware of it. And I think that also goes for humanity. It's a pretty amazing thing to see that happen. That's me, ball bearings, and I hope you have a similar epiphany and really enjoy looking at them and thinking about them. Thanks for listening. podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.